Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to Love Letters Live. And we present every week personal stories and love letters to follow because Teresa and I know that every personal experience has in it the seeds of a love letter to someone, gratitude expressed. And we say, why not do it? Why not write it and stamp it and mail it? Because gratitude you take to the grave doesn't help anybody. Right?
That's correct.
So we're going to go right to our guest, Juan Carlos Arauz, who is an adjunct professor at Dominican College in San Rafael. He's the director of E3, which is Educational Excellence.
And Equity.
And I want to go right to you. You did say something. I wish this were one of those television moments now so you can see this exceptionally handsome, very young man who has 8 children.
Yes.
And he told me that, and that kind of stunned me, but just... 6, you say, are adopted, but they're still yours.
Yes.
And let's just talk about you and what motivates you for just a minute before we get on to something that is your field, which is immigration and very, very important in America.
So what motivates me, I would say, is first and foremost my parents. You know, I always introduce myself as the son of Dr. Arauz and Elizabeth Arauz. Their life, their struggles. They were born and raised in Nicaragua, left Nicaragua before the political turmoil. Then in Brazil, where he was studying to be a physician, is where I was born.
Interesting.
And then there was the military coup in 65, which then, of course, led to more political instability. And hence we found our way here to the States.
How old were you when you came here?
I came as a baby, about a year old. But then we moved around.
That's why there's no trace of an accent whatsoever in you.
Exactly. But if I need to, I can speak like this so that people understand me better.
So can I, but that doesn't count.
Well, I started my formal schooling in California, but then in Florida, I then did my other formal schooling there. So I learned how to speak with a southern drawl. And so this is what I do when I go back home and people think that I speak normal down there, too. So the piece that I learned was to really adapt as much as I could because of what my father was trying to do. And ultimately, he had to redo his... physician's license in the States, and that took another 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So the one thing that was really, for me, the motivating factor is my parents saying to me, we came to this country for you and your education. And that, for me, kind of has stayed with me all my life, which then has now made me realize the secret that my mother kept saying is they can take everything away from you, but they can never take away your love and your mind. And so with that, that motivates me from the inside with my children.
So that's the part I think I was wondering about, the love, because you put so much time into taking care of other children.
Yes.
Your children.
Yes.
And taking care of people. I mean,
yes.
you are just a major caretaker, right? Okay, so let's talk about... You want to talk about immigration.
Start. Well, I think for me, the piece that I am most passionate about is children in general. And that's in the focus of education and immigration, because I had my own immigration experience here. And now there's the issue of undocumented immigrants, particularly immigrant children, who didn't necessarily have a choice to come here. My point that I always try to advocate is for these children who really don't know where they're from, here or there, are striving for an education because that's what's instilled in them, and then to realize that there are these barriers that prevent them from having an education. And so that's the piece.
But are there barriers? I thought everybody got.
Well, yes. So everybody is allowed to have a K-12 education. However, the limiting factor is that then applying to college, financial assistance from the federal government, which how most people do apply for their way to get to college, is denied for undocumented immigrant children. And so there's been this legislation that's been trying to pass for 8 years called the DREAM Act that would allow these children to receive this federal financial aid and also receive a path to residency, assuming that they did graduate and move forward. So from that aspect, that's been the piece that I've been trying to advocate. And at the same time, that's a political level. At the end of the day, it's about the children that we work with, elementary, middle school, high school, college, who are still trying to find their way.
So when you say we work with, this
so
is through E3?
this is through my own work in terms of on my own time, that on my own, we have a group called One Dream 2009, and we what we do is we really have students write down their stories in digital format, so it's called digital storytelling, and telling their stories of their experiences and their struggles.
But who are these children? How do you get them?
Well, I used to do a lot of work in the Canal neighborhood of San Rafael. That's also where my research tended to be or was. And so through that course of the last 10 years that I've been in San Francisco, or California, I should say, I came across all these undocumented immigrant children who had a story to share, who had a passion about education and wanted to move forward. And so I worked with them.
Did you get them in their high school classes? In what?
In their college is what we did.
Oh, I see. Because they're...
Because they were undocumented. They could get through high school, but they couldn't get to college.
Right. So at what point did you start talking to them?
So I would talk with them. I ran an after-school program.
I see. So they knew where to come.
They knew where to come already. Right. So that's where the home place was that I worked with them in.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was from there that sharing their stories became really the important piece. Uh-huh. That if we could have not a political debate, but a human conversation about what it takes for children to be educated.
So what are some of the stories? Can you share a couple with us?
So I think of some of the stories about just a mother who in Guatemala did not have enough to fend for her family, and so she sent her son, her two sons, one at a time, to cross the border so that they could just, you know, eventually they knew about finding food here, that there would be money, there would be work. So they came across my table, literally, in the canal area, and in their stories, you know, they were just talking basic needs of how could I survive, can I move on, and it was in that we realized, well, they're just trying to survive. They became aware about the opportunity for an education and decide, well, I actually want, you know, their stories like, I actually want to move forward. I want to go to college. There are heartbreaking stories where we were working with children that we knew and the father or the mother was deported by the immigration officials. And so the children didn't have a place to go and didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden...
So they would deport parents and leave children here?
And the children were left here.
If they had been born here or just...
It just depends in each case. Sometimes immigration officials will take the whole family. Other times immigration officials will leave the children.
At the request of the parents?
At the request of the parents or not. I mean, it's very arbitrary. That's the unfortunate situation.
That's a problem.
It is. It's
because, I mean, there are rules and laws about... becoming citizens,
yes,
and coming into the country, into any country,
yes,
any country, and if you have arbitrariness, it's hard for people to know what to do.
Yes. Well, the challenge with the law is that the law states that X so many people can come into this country.
From given areas or just
every
period?
Area. Mm-hmm. It's, so it's equal in that sense. But the reality is 20,000 Icelanders are not going to come next year.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
But from Mexico or Guatemala or these countries that we have colonized and imperialized, that's where more children or more families will come over. The other piece is that when people do come over, the wait list to come over here, what people would say legally, is 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I always pose the question to anyone that if you have a family, you have children, and you don't have work, you will do whatever you have to do to have your family survive. And if that means coming over this country to this country and finding work however you can find work, you will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I admire about these people, that this, we're talking about a population of undocumented immigrants, particularly children, who don't have necessarily the choices that we have or the privileges, and they're doing the best that they can to survive, and yet we're penalizing them for that process.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see some solution to this whole immigration issue now?
Well, I do believe that education is the key, and that's something that benefits every person.
Yes.
So the better educated we are as a society, the better informed we are. And the key, really, then, is to focus on education starting with the children, that if we educate the children as much as we can, at the highest potential that every student can, then they actually contribute more and then provide more for the society. And that, I think, is really where we start as a basis of that piece.
Do you have any feelings about, I mean, you know, I look at this, I look at people coming across borders and leaving these beautiful, beautiful countries, which is where their hearts and souls and lives and history is, that's a tragic thing for somebody to have to leave a country.
Absolutely.
And come here and, I mean, not to take away anything from here.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just, it's a real sadness. You see this with Mexico that's just undergoing the most grotesque times right now with you know, drug wars and slaughter and murder, and who would want to stay there? But is there any way to make countries better before immigration becomes so necessary?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we could think about...
Why should people have to live fish out of water?
Absolutely.
In foreign cultures?
At the end of the day, I think what again, I go back to education, how important education is, that just in general, our public is not very well informed and educated on the benefits of immigration. And I think the other piece is understanding education. If we were to invest in our other these other countries in their educational system, then again, you know, what we're dealing with is the more educated a family is, the more educated a society is, then the solutions to all these problems are for the most part taken care of.
Because I know you're talking about the emotional issue also. You talk about, which struck me, I was really touched by that, working with children, they don't know if they're from here or from there. And I can see where a couple of generations down the line, we're all Americans. It doesn't matter. But for the generation who has to come here, it's just heartbreak. And to be raised by people who are in heartbreak is not a good or easy thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, doesn't that present its own problems?
It does. And so that's the challenge, is that, you know, when I work with the students, it's really about clear about saying, we're not going to be able to change your situation. What we can do is work with you to change your attitude of the situation, to use that as a strength as opposed to as a weakness.
Do people come here ever with an eye towards going back home when it's better?
Always.
Tell me about that.
So
I would imagine so.
To even my own father, who says he wants to be buried in Nicaragua, that when it's time, we'll go back. That there is this dream that we all have, that we're going to go back to our motherland. And Cubanos talk about that all the time, that when Castro goes, then we'll go back.
I would think.
There's this you know, intuitive connection that we have with where we were born, where we were raised.
And not just where we were born and raised, but where our parents and grandparents. And
indeed.
Where our souls are.
So it is that, and that's the piece of the immigrant experience that I think is unique to immigrants, that they feel that, okay, I'm here for a temporary time, but that temporary time, for the most part, tends to be for their lives. It's a struggle, but that's the piece, that at the end of the day, if we can focus on our children and focus on our future, and at the end of the day, I think focus on education.
So your direction really is that, not the political about what's going on in the countries they have to come
from. And, correct. At the end of the day, I mean, although I do would like to see some of the policies changed, I've come to realize that I'm not going to be in Congress. I'm not looking to be a political activist in the sense of that arena. I'm aware, though, as an educator, I am being political, and I am being a political activist.
And you say you won't be in Congress because you don't want to? Or, I mean, how do you know? Life will take you.
I say too many skeletons in my closet.
Okay.
Well, and as we know, people in Congress don't always have a lot of power either, and the power really should come from the people.
That's
absolutely
true. Yes.
And you have chosen something that you can do. You can't do it all. You realize
correct.
That. So you're saying, what are my strengths and talents? What can I do? Start there.
Absolutely. And I've come to realize that my strength is my own charisma in terms of working with people, particularly young people, and focusing on education. I realize that my strength is in really building out these systems that would help from an educational basis for every student, that then in turn focuses on the needs of the very population that I'm most concerned about, the immigrant population or the marginalized poor population. And I'm able to do that, and hence why I have the organization, because that's what continues to build. That's what continues to excite people to move forward, is when they hear about education, they want to hear more.
Yeah.
When I talk about immigration, when I talk about other issues, it becomes too political, and it's gotten shut down. So for me, I've come to realize that my strength is adapting my language as well as my thought in terms of translating it so people can hear it.
Well, you've used the phrase or the word adapting a few times. Is that a positive or a negative for you?
Oh, for me, it's a positive. It's it's one of my five essential 21st century skills.
Oh, good. What are the other four? Okay.
Well, the other four in English, the way people know it, is critical analysis, teamwork, cross-cultural communication, adaptability, innovation.
And you shouldn't be in Congress?
Well, the funny thing is that work came out of my work with immigrants who show this resiliency that I call it cultural resiliency. But so adaptability, you know, when you think about having moved so many times as an immigrant, that's actually a strength. It can be viewed as a deficit, but it's actually a strength that now in whatever position that I'm personally in, I can adapt to whatever situation I go into. That skill set will benefit any human being.
You know, you see that. I mean, I am so aware of that when I look at people who have come here.
Yes.
And don't speak English and manage to get around as best they can and make a life and survive. It is so powerful and so touching.
Yes. And that's what's bringing, I think, more of our children together, more of the parents together, is that when we create and identify what unites us, which around it's our children and our children's future, we can talk about something like adaptability that all parents, regardless of their politics, will say, I want that for my child. And the ideal thing here that's happening for me is that I have a lot of wealthy families who are saying, I want that for my child. Where do I get it? And I said, well, come to me to the canal, and I'll show you some kids who have this adaptability, and you'll learn together. And that's what I think the promise is bringing us together in a common form so that we have a better future.
I like that critical analysis part, too. Where do you... How do you use that?
So we use that. I mean, this
is. How do you train that?
Well, it's what we call the lived experiences. And critical analysis is understanding that from where you live and how different that is from where you go to school or where you go to work. So if you're speaking Spanish at home, or you're in a poor environment at home, or you're in a, you know, abusive home at home, and then you go to this normalized experience called school, all of a sudden you're having to critique as a child, subconsciously many times, how do I act at home and how do I act at school?
So it's part of adapting too, though, isn't it?
It is part of adapting, but it's the thought process that actually gets you to adapt successfully.
I see.
If you come from the same home lifestyle that's the same as your school lifestyle, you're not really critically thinking about your two different environments.
Right.
But it's what I always say about life. You know, those in the target arena, women know what it's like to be women. Men don't think about that. People of color think about being a person of color. White folks tend to not think about that. Poor people know that they're poor. Rich people tend to forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the pieces, that those become actually our strengths instead of just our weakness.
Mm-hmm. And what... Probably, I'm asking, I guess I should ask, whatever we have, it's normalcy.
Absolutely.
Whatever our normal is.
Yes.
It's, yes.
We all have our strengths inside, and that's what we want to tap into, that our experiences that we have, that I remember as a child, that, you know, being ridiculed for my accent or being ridiculed for my skin color, those were issues that, well, I know, as crazy as that sounds, but those are the issues that then... turned into, for me, strengths as opposed to deficits.
Okay, so for you, because I, you know, you see this once in a while, and it's just heartbreaking. Children who are really ashamed of what they come from because it's different.
Yes.
So you work with children in this? I mean, so that they can retain pride in that accent and skin color?
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is where the hard process that I wish I had, my parents didn't know how to put that in with me, but, you know, I had many years of hate and anger dealing with that accent, dealing with my skin color, that I remember 4 years old in this country not knowing the language but knowing that I had to rub my skin as much as I could to turn so that it would, I could take off the dirt off my skin, which really was brown skin. I couldn't take that off.
Because other children were calling names?
Names, as I understood it, however a four-year-old understands that. And my mother not knowing how to deal with me and just saying, no, I'm okay, that, you know.
Well, how would you deal with a child who's doing that now?
So with, you know, I don't deal with four-year-old children, but I deal with middle school.
But
I, yeah, with children. And the piece that we try to do at a young age is to demonstrate there are other people of color who are just as beautiful. There are people of color who, as your dolls, as your toys, you know, that we, part of what our work is demonstrating the opposite of what we're already taught.
You know, the whole issue is so bizarre. I mean, the entire multi-billion dollar suntan industry.
Yes.
Is nobody wants to be pasty.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I know we just, it's just bewildering. People are nuts. Okay. So I have a question now because we don't have too many minutes more. And as we are about the power of letters sent, if you were to write a love letter right now to somebody in your life along your journey, I've got about six people in your life already I'd like to write letters to. Who would you write a letter to? Let's talk about
it. So many people in my life. So many people in my life. My parents are still alive.
Oh, nice. And your father practiced medicine?
And my father practiced medicine. He's still alive. So there's so many mentors that I've had in my life, my parents included. But probably right now, as crazy as this might sound, it would be to my wife.
Not crazy at all.
My wife has been with me for 11 years, but we've only been married for seven. And for my wife, she has been through probably the hardest part of my life these last 10 years of me trying to struggle.
In what way?
Trying to struggle of who I really am. I mean, in my 20s and in my 30s, I had so much rage that I called it righteous rage towards everything that had happened to me. And so failing in school.
That's what happened to you, Phil?
Doing poorly in school, for example, or the ridicules from the other piece of just being, you know, dark skinned with an accent. And then also just taking out on a social justice end, you know, being with anger that fuels a lot of us in the social justice world.
How did she handle it?
So she handled it with love. And, you know, there's a, I don't know how to translate this in English, but cariño, you know, is a way of saying love. Yeah. But it was this place of that for during this time, she gave me the space to grow, gave me the space to find who I was with the security to know that she was still going to be there.
And she was never threatened by your rage or your...
Oh, she was.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
Why I say that she has stood the test of time during those 11
years. So that's
a
bravery on a woman's part.
Amazing courage.
Uh-huh.
Amazing courage, amazing bravery, and amazing faith. That a human being could stand by another human being despite the person's action. As a parent myself, I understand that I will love my children no matter what they do, as heinous as it may be that they do something, God forbid they do. But for another human being to not do that, that doesn't have the blood lineage, and to still care and love them, that I think is the courage
and
bravery.
So when you say doesn't have the blood lineage, where's she from?
Meaning that her and I were not related by blood.
I see.
Saying in Spanish that they say you can love your family. You don't have to like them, but you have to love them. So with partnerships, it's amazing that she's been able to do that. So it's that kind of gratitude.
And, you know, Teresa and I talk about in our workshop about what makes a good letter a great letter is the specifics. Mm-hmm. And what specifically about her, do we have another couple of minutes here? What specifically about her? This is what you are grateful for.
Yes.
That's important.
Mm-hmm.
What do you love about her? What about her is just delicious?
So
what does she look like?
I call her Pocahontas.
Oh.
She's part indigenous, Cherokee, so long, long brownish hair, high cheekbones.
So she's beautiful.
And she is absolutely gorgeous.
Okay.
And it's grace.
Uh-huh.
I've looked up that word in Webster's Dictionary to better understand what that means, but grace is an amazing ability that she has to be able to hold me and still forgive me. Firm with me, patient with me, and ultimately love me.
And what else about her?
About her, then I love...
What are her talents? What's she best at? I guess motherhood is a big thing.
Motherhood, eight children. Motherhood is a big talent. She has that. She has an almost, you know, this unbelievably overgiving love sense of her. Amazing thinker. She's a great thought partner.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an amazing, 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 amazing inspiration to other young women. In her own right, she works with young women who are mothers and helping them stand on their own two feet.
Mm-hmm. Does she have any abilities that you know about that she doesn't know you know about?
Geez.
Well, I would say she dances a lot better than she probably thinks she does.
Okay.
I love dancing with her.
Okay.
I don't think she sees her beauty the way I see her beauty.
Would you like her to?
I would love for her to.
Okay. So you're going to go home and write this?
Yeah.
It's probably the only place you come home with homework.
Absolutely.
But have you ever written her a love letter before?
Many times.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. I should have asked that right away.
Yes, many times. So,
and,
yes.
And being very specific about what you love about her?
Yes, or I hope that I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually in moments that then inspire me to write something in that moment.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
I do a lot of spoken word, and so it's in those pieces and in those formats that
I do
that.
By the way, you do a lot of spoken word, and
yes.
that's something important because you were just brilliant at that. I can see after having known you now for, 23 minutes.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's staggering how good you are at this and putting what you think and what you feel into words. But having it in handwriting.
Oh, yes.
Your handwriting is different altogether because you can't reread a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stationary, too.
Yes, you can, but it'll, memory dims, and
absolutely.
You'll remember things as you want, and, what did he really
yes,
say? This
yes.
is this
permanent.
Is as good as, that's right, and a signed contract.
Yes.
Okay, so Teresa mentioned stationary. What kind of stationary will you use? I'm such a busybody.
I would probably use puzzle pieces.
Oh, how good.
Because it's the puzzle pieces that we put each other together.
Okay, that's wonderful. Okay,
yes.
Stationery says a lot. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For
thank
doing
you.
This with us.
Yes, thank you for being here. We thank all of our listeners. Please join us every week at this time, right here at this time. And in the meantime, we always encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So,
and we wish many of them for you.
So till next week, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.
Bye.